Hey, podcast themselves and your listeners, it's your wonderful host, Kent Hill, coming to you live from the far side of the world where the sun is dawning, but the sun has already set in the big New York City, where I'm talking to the very talented filmmaker who's made a tremendous, 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 tremendous little gem of a documentary, a cinematic Valentine, if you will. To the great champion, mojo storyteller from Nacogdoches, Texas, Joel Lansdale, Hanzi Oppenheimer. Welcome to Podcast Them Softly.
Thank you. That was quite the intro. Thank you.
That's okay. I like to wind them up, get the kids excited. In the great tradition of I love what people don't know about me. As far as my cinematic watching habits, they think they got me figured out where I watch nothing but old straight-to-video stuff. That's not true. When I'm alone in the house all by myself, I like to watch documentaries. And I love documentaries about writers. So in the grand tradition of, like, Chris and Don, A Love Story, Gore Vidal, The Man Who Said No, Life Itself, Salinger, the Charles Bukowski tape, Strumbo...
Yeah, the Bukowski tapes.
Breakfast with Hunter, you know, all the great stuff. We've got a new addition to the list. It's a wonderful documentary. All Hail the Popcorn King. Hanzi, first of all, right off the top of the bat, wonderful film. Really enjoyed it. Been waiting for a documentary about Joe Lansdale for a while now, so thank you for making it a reality.
Oh, my pleasure. It was really fun to make.
So, where did Joe Lansdale begin for you?
Oh, in the 80s. I ran across his work. I don't remember if it was Silver Scream, you know, the Night They Missed the Horror Show, or, let's see how the early one, or Night Runners. I don't remember, but, you know, along with, you know, Skip and Spectre and all those guys that hate the term splatterpunk.
Right.
I discovered all those guys simultaneously. And,
right.
You know, I've been reading Joe ever since, and, you know, he's so multifaceted in his writing. He's, you know, jumps genres. I mean, so, and I love weird westerns most of all, so... You know, that always has my heart. But, you know, everything he does is in his voice and unique and wonderful.
Right. I read a weird western once.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's called Alien Smut Peddlers from the Future.
I love it already.
check it out on Amazon.com. Or you can get the audiobook. Are you into audiobooks?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, you can listen to it on Audible as well, if you like. The guy who narrated it
cool.
Did a real bang-up job. He, as I said to Joe himself when I was talking to him the other day, I said, Joe, I said, I wanted to write a Joe Lansdale novel, but I really wanted to have an audiobook like the Phil Giganti who used to do his Happen Leonard audiobooks. And I said,
right.
Yeah, and I said, I finally found a guy to narrate one of my books, so now... It might be as good as a Joe Lansdale book, or what Joe Lansdale would have done with that story, but it sounds a little bit like those early Phil Giganti narrated Happen Leonard stories. He did like Bad Chili and Two Bear Mambo and Mucho Mojo and Mucho Mojo and Captain's Outrageous and ones like that. So. Yeah. So,
yeah, The Magic Wagon is one of my favorite books of his.
Yeah.
I love that book so much.
Yeah.
When I finally got an opportunity to interview him, because I had never been to Texas, and I was finally invited to a con in Texas 2 years ago.
Right.
So we were friends, Joe and I were friends on Twitter, and I just reached out and said, you know, hey, any chance I could get you for an interview for my YouTube channel? So he invited me to Nacogdoches, and, you know, and so I had, like, 30, 40 years of questions about his books.
Right, yeah. What
we sat, and
yeah.
I just asked him, like, what about the dozen? What about the magic wagon?
Yeah, I felt the same. I felt the same way. I was sitting there thinking, and I had kind of things I wanted to talk about, but it all sort of went away when I heard his voice, and I sort of went, "Oh, hello, sir." So you were one of the Beatles, you know. But no, I completely like lost my mind, and I just lucky I had a few things in front of me. I sort of scribbled down, but it's funny. But once you get to talking, it doesn't matter if you don't know someone at all. But I find people of Joe's shine kind of, it doesn't matter if you don't know him. He talks to you like he does. Sort of thing. Does it make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, he's
just Joe all the time. He's just Joe. Like,
yeah.
Whether you're filming him, interviewing him, hanging out with him, you get Joe hands
down.
Which is pretty cool.
I love. I. One of the things I love about him, mate, is he makes theatre into three words. Theatre. I said I think that. I didn't want to lead him into saying it. Like, I wasn't going to say, can you just say theater for me? So I tried to talk about drive-ins and because I thought he'll say it if I keep saying something about going to the movies or going to theater. And I just thought,
yeah.
It's just beautiful. It was just like, you know, it's like something out of his stories, you know.
Yeah,
but,
the whole family talks like that, and it's really charming. And they're funny, like, so in when Casey says the proof is in the pudding, you know, I mean, I don't know anyone who uses that phrase.
Right, the proof is in the pudding.
It's so charming.
I think
yeah.
my grandma used to, but yeah, that's beautiful, yeah.
I mean, nobody in New York ever says that.
I can't imagine there'd be too many proofers in the pudding kind of cab drivers around there, eh?
No.
Yeah, but I mean, you have an incredible lineup of people that have come together to talk about Joe. You know, of course, the likes of Don Cascarelli and the man with a chin that could kill, Bruce Campbell,
yeah.
Mick Garris, who
yeah.
I've actually spoken to myself. It's
Mick Garris, sweetheart.
Oh, he's a wonderful bloke. Took me 3 years to get him to talk to me because he was always doing something. And then I think...
Yeah, he's busy.
I think finally he took pity on me and he said, all right.
Yeah, I had to chase him a little because I wanted a soundbite from him for my Joe Bob Briggs documentary.
Right, yeah.
And I had to chase him a little bit. And he was willing to do it, it's just he just didn't have the time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when he sent it, it was perfect and wonderful. And then when I was doing the Joe Lansdale, me and Mick were at the same convention. They were screening my Joe Bob Briggs doc, and Mick was there as, you know, one of their honored guests. So we just ended up hanging out in my hotel room, and I was able to shoot the interview with him, and he's just lovely. I mean, couldn't
yeah.
be nicer.
Fantastic, yeah, and full of great stories. That's what I love about these people. They're full of great. Like Joe's different in the essence. He writes them down, but a lot of these people, you sit and talk to them. Like I can only imagine talking to Bruce Campbell. What was talking with Bruce Campbell like?
That one was the one I was the most nervous about because I, you know, been a huge fan of his for, you know, decades, and Evil Dead's one of my favorite films, and I love everything he does, and, you know, I've met him at cons and stuff, but never, like, on a personal level, just sort of like, hi, sign this, you know, thank you so much, I adore your work,
right,
go
yeah.
away.
Right.
So,
touch me!
one con, I walked up to him, and I was just holding a Sharpie in my hand. I was wearing like a tank top, and he's like, "So what are we doing here, sweetie?" I was like, "Just find a shirt." I'm sure people have asked him to get tattoos of his, you know, the
that's fantastic
autographed body parts for tattoos.
Yeah.
That was funny too, because I have when I did the replacements on the documentary about the replacements, I got Paul Westerberg to sign me, and I got that tattooed. And at one point when I was shooting in Nacogdoches, me and Joe were hanging out with a friend of his, Tim Bryant, and I was telling him about that story, and he's like, "Oh, you're gonna get Jared's autograph statue on your museum book? We're gonna tell her horrified." Like, no.
Oh man, it's crazy. It's
you know, not that. Yeah.
It's tough to be objective when you're coming from the place of a fan. Like the love of these things that we go after, whether we're homaging writers that influence us, or we are, you know, making documentaries about them, or, you know, doing something creative that was driven by a passion that was ignited by either the words or the cinema or the art or the music of someone else. It's a pretty magical perpetuation, isn't it?
Yeah, I love the creator-fan reciprocal relationship because they inspire me to create, and then it just sort of, you know, it goes back out and inspires other people. It's just fascinating. I think anyone that inspires you to make art, you know, it's valuable.
Yeah.
So, I'm making fan works is kind of my jam.
All right. Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, look. I mean, I'm all about anything that inspires you and incites you to want to elevate yourself or someone else to say, look, hey, do you know about this guy? You know, I mean, I'm sure there are people who don't know who Joe Lansdale is. You know, it's always a possibility.
Yeah,
like,
no, I had a friend who came to the premiere who was in Austin and didn't know who he was.
Mm.
And a friend came because it was my premiere, and then, you know, they just emailed me that they are on vacation with, because he was giving out autograph books to everyone who got a ticket. And
right.
So they, like, I'm spending my weekend reading Cold in July.
Yeah.
<That's> good. And there we got another one.
Yeah. That's great. I mean, because it's true. I mean, you talk about people. Like, the first, one of the things, because I was kind of buzzing while I was talking to him, and I nearly forgot to ask Joe whether he was familiar with the other of my sort of, one of the other pillars of my literary heaven, which is Charles Bukowski. A couple of wonderful documentaries made about
him. Asked him that, and that's an interesting question because I'm a big Bukowski fan.
Yeah.
But he and I did talk about some other writers while I was in Nacogdoches. We talked about Chandler a lot because we're both big Chandler fans.
Yeah.
And Darryl, like, I think he's got an eidetic memory, actually, you know, because I love Chandler and I read him over and over for years, but I can't just quote specific things, and Lansdale just immediately spit out like three of his really like coolest quotes, and I was like, oh my god, I have to do that.
Yeah, I have to have the book, like, I had to have the books in front of me because I knew I'd be nervous, so I had sort of post-it marked the pages, because there were certain lines in his stories that just stick with me, almost like dialogue from a movie, like quotable lines. Like,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
They're almost as good as, like, I'll be back, or, you know, they're like quotable lines. Like, I see Joe's book like a really good movie, and you love it so much you watch it a lot, and so you walk around doing the dialogue. Like, you know, you walk around like someone, you just wait for a chance to say a lot.
And do you, like, now that you've, like, heard his voice, do you, like, read everything in his voice now of his? You hear it now, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I had heard him before, and I did have a couple of audiobooks that he did narrate himself, or a couple of stories that he, short stories, I think it was, he narrated himself, or he read himself. And but it is true, like, yeah, after you hear, when I first heard Bukowski's voice, after everything I read after that, I could hear his voice almost telling you the story. Or you could hear him sort of sitting there thinking about that and typing it, sort of thing, you know. It's spooky but nice too, because you get what people don't really know about writers is they do write how they speak. Like, I can imagine Joe sitting down and telling one of his stories to me, and then read it and find it was very similar. Like, he might embellish some certain parts for, you know, for the reader, you know, to stir the imagination. But really, if a story is told to you well, you know, it's the things that they leave out that give your imagination fuel to catch a fire. Isn't that true?
Yeah, I mean, it's just as much what you put in as what you take out, right? I mean, that's art, you know, and then there's the whole theory of art being subtractive, not, you know, so it's, right, you know, that's editing and everything. It's taking all the stuff out that, you know, it's unnecessary, you know, to tell the story. Because I always, you know, a couple hundred hours of shit, and then we were like, fuck, what story? It took me and my editor like 2 weeks of just going through all this, but it's like, what is the story here? And then once we found the story, then it was like, okay, now what goes where? But we haven't. But, yeah, that was... You never know when you're shooting. I don't know when I'm shooting. I just shoot, and I see how it goes.
Yeah. I imagine... I've never made a documentary. I've thought about it. Because there's a lot of stuff I would love to make a documentary on. But I've spoken to enough documentarians now, and it's a haul. Like, some people spend years on one documentary. Like, it might take...
I spent 10 years on my first.
Yeah.
Year.
So, yeah, so you know. And, like, you know, like...
I mean, now I'm doing about one a year. So, you know, I've picked up the pace because I started to... you know, figure out how to get it done. But the first one took like 10 years. It was just brutal. Because I didn't know, you know, I just go around in circles because you don't know how to do it.
Well, exactly, you know? Because you're essentially documenting something that you're going to put together in a narrative type film later. And, you know, did you ever see that documentary Capturing the Freedmans?
No.
Yeah, it's about this father and son that were accused of child molestation. He was a teacher. But it didn't start out that way. It started out as a documentary about clowns that people hire for kids' parties. You know?
Jesus Christ.
And yeah, you need to check it out. It started as a documentary about these clowns and this one particular guy. And one day they're sitting on his stoop. He's a New Yorker as well. Out on his stoop, and he comes to this question. He says, you know, what was your family life like? And he was like, oh, you know, he said, my dad was a teacher, and he taught piano, and he taught computer, and all this sort of stuff. But so he did all that because he wanted to get away from his wife, because him and his wife didn't get on, you know. And he says, you know, and he says, there's a lot I could tell you about my family. And it was after they actually filmed that he came to him. He said, you know, because he sort of smiles at the end of the take, and he says, you know, he says, off the record, what would you tell me about your family?
Yeah.
And
Don't ever do that to a documentarian.
Yeah.
Off the record when you're working to a camera.
Yeah.
That's not how it works.
Yeah. It's terrible. But I've got to say, some of the best stuff, some of the best stories I've had since I've been doing this whole interviewing gig now for a few years now, it's some of the best stories I've got are off the record.
Right, but then don't tell someone on camera.
No, they end up on there. Yeah.
You're just, right, I mean, there's no off the record if we're talking about camera.
It's a fascinating thing, and I give you all the credit in the world for taking all the efforts and all the pains and the anxieties and everything else you go through while trying to put these things together, because you've made another wonderful one. It's called All Hail the Popcorn King. It's a documentary about Champion Joe, the Muchu Mojo storyteller from Nacogdoches. Thank you very much. And it's fascinating. So, Hansi, do you want to tell people, you want to plug where it's at, where it's playing, where they can see it?
Sure. So after the screening, you know, we took notes because it was the, you know, premiere, so there's some things I need to tweak. So that's what we're working on right now. Our next screening, George R. R. Martin has invited us to screen at the John Cocteau Theater in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Yeah.
And we're screening October 5th. I think it's going to be screening with Bubba Hotep. and George is going to host a Q&A with me and Joe. And if Don comes with Don, you know, for Bubba Hotep, and I think they're doing a whole Lanzapalooza because Casey is playing the day before. And then we're screening at the Nacogdoches Film Festival in February.
Awesome.
And doing a New York premiere on December 3rd at the Alamo Draft House. And Casey's joining us, and she's going to perform some music. And I'm working on LA screening right now with a like meet and greet reception at Dell House and Stark Delicacy.
Right. Wow.
So, bunch of stuff.
So, yeah, there's no excuse, folks. It's going to be out there. It's just going to be a matter of you going to see it. And I really urge that you do go and see All Hail the Popcorn King documentary about Joe Lansdell. My guest has been Hansi Oppenheimer, the very talented documentarian. Hansi, thank you for being on Podcasting Them Softly.
Absolutely a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much. And, yeah, go check it out, folks. All Hail the Popcorn King. This is Kent Hill. See you later.